January 10, 2024, it's the Walk for Pedro Show. Off for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday. Start off, John Coltrane, My Favorite Things, a live excerpt from Birdland, March 2, 1963, John Coltrane. Then Velvet Crush, Ash and Earth, because of those Estonian software engineers with their scab invention, I got with me. Paul Chastain, is that how you pronounce?
Chastain.
Chastain, thank you.
Yes.
Paul Chastain, all the way over from Japan, 17 hours ahead of what?
That's right.
Welcome aboard, yeah. Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, not the most practiced intros, but hey, you're aboard. And first off, let's give Howard credit for the connect, right?
Oh, man, Howard's awesome.
Yeah, beautiful man. Yeah, absolutely.
He's a good dude.
The wolf. Okay.
The wolf, the howling wolf.
Right. You know he was in the Nurses, right, in the 70s.
Yeah.
Way back, yeah. Fuck yeah, Howard.
He's got quite a little musical pedigree himself there.
Absolute. Takes one to know one, or knows one to take one. Whatever. So you know it's who you blow. I can't remember. I can't keep it straight. Paul, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection. Wow.
Remember, it's a Walk for Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Jeez, I don't know.
I've had cats. Here, for example, I've had cats on the show who was hearing shit while they were still inside their ma.
Wow. Well, not quite that early. Not quite that early.
It seems the most common one is riding around in their parents' car hearing the radio.
Yeah, I got that. I got that, too. But I think I heard, I think I'm thinking more like TV, music from TV or radio, you know, in the house.
Yeah.
Just my mom playing music and sitting there as a little kid. And, yeah, and then a little bit later on, I have an older brother, and he would bring music in, you know, like some singles and things like that. So that was a little bit later. I started hearing pop music, like, you know, like the Monkees and things like that.
But TV music's your first musical memory, or your earliest one you got at this point in your life. What about this pad you grew up in? Besides having an older brother, was there musical instruments?
Just, you know, my brother played trumpet, and my mom played a little guitar when she was a kid and stuff, so, but not super musical. I mean, we just kind of gravitated.
What I'm wondering is if you jumped on any of those musical instruments.
Sure, like, you know, since my brother played trumpet, so I learned to play kind of by ear, you know, before I was able to do it in school. I would just pick up his horn, his cornet that he had abandoned for the trumpet. And I learned to play that, you know, kind of by myself before I took it to school. And then when I would go to
school. Let's talk about school. Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
I was in the band. I was always a band guy. Like, I started playing trumpet in, like, fifth grade or something. And then after that, I was just playing horn in school all the time. And I was in all the bands, you know, marching band.
Sure. Trumpet,
band,
huh?
Jazz combo.
And maybe some kind of influence from your brother, maybe?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, that's the records I learned to play to, actually, and I still love these records, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass records. You know those records?
Well, I think it's Tijuana. There's no A, but...
Tijuana, right.
Yeah, right, because it's Aunt Josephine, right? Or no, it's Aunt Jeanette. It's Aunt Jeanette if you put an A in there, but... it's about 120 miles south of me. I think it's the busiest border crossing in the world. But
yeah, right, wow.
He had a lot... You know what? The story I heard that tripped me out. You know,
yeah.
Well, they don't know how to come in. So supposedly, who's the first call drummer man? Hal Blaine. He says, yeah. So he comes up with that fucking kick drum to get him in.
Boom, boom, boom.
That's it. That was actually a device to get the band together, and it became signature for the tune. Shows to go, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, man.
Let me ask you this, Paul.
When you're hearing that stuff or as a kid, you have no idea that it's like this legendary.
Shit, I was a grown man, and I had no idea about that shit.
Yeah, so like, no, it's the record crew. Anyway, the Herb records, I learned to play trumpet to those, kind of.
There was a great band up in the city called Black Humor, and they had this one tune, I think it was called Neo Hippies. And one of the lines was, the only thing new is you finding out about it.
Yeah.
Wow, talk about an aphorism.
Now, what was the first record you bought with your own money, Paul?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I think maybe I bought a Beatles 45 at a garage sale. It was kind of my first one, you know, and I was too young to be going to record stores.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because when you're young, you ain't got a lot of money, so it's trippy to see what you would spend.
Yeah, so I think I bought maybe Hey Jude or something, and you know, on the Apple label and all that, and the 45 of it, all scratched up copy at a garage sale.
Right, right. And first gig you saw?
First gig I saw? Oh, geez. Wow. Well, you know what? The first club show I ever went to, there was I grew up in Champaign, Illinois, right? And
College Town. There was a band there. Champaign Urbana, the sister town, right?
Champaign Urbana, yeah. I grew up there. That's where the University of Illinois is. And I grew up there. And
Fighting Illini. Great colors, like blue and orange or some shit.
Orange and blue, yep, that's it. The Illini. So there was a band there called The Rave that I used to go see. And they were kind of like, in a way, they were sort of maybe influenced by Cheap Trick, how they kind of like had their own sort of personas, you know, stage personas, because Cheap Trick's from Rockford, Illinois, and it's, you know, in the same state.
Quad City.
They were a big influence on everybody in the state, I think. So anyway, I went to see this band. My friend, Jake Slichter, who is now in the band called Semisonic. He was my high school friend, and his brother worked for this band called The Rave, and we were probably still, you know, we were too young to go into a club, but they got us into the show because, you know, his brother got us in. And I had never been into a club, you know, a rock club, seen a show, and it just blew my head off. You know, it was like so awesome.
First rock club Minutemen played in Champaign was Mabel's.
Mabel's, yeah, I used to play there all the time. That was
The roadie that doesn't lift anything for REO Speedwagon came to our gig. It was snowing outside. This motherfucker was sweating.
Awesome.
By the way, that was an image. They, I guess, moved to SoCal because we were playing this gig in the Val. And I remember the trippiest scene I ever saw was D. Boone talking to the singer of REO Speedwagon. You know, this guy's wearing designer jeans and shit. But he was seriously engaged with D. Boone. It was very interesting. So yeah, do you remember the band? It was The Rave that was playing, huh? Okay.
Yeah, this band called The Rave, yeah. And they were like a pretty pop, but rock. And the thing about it was, since I'd never experienced a club before, just everything about it, you know, hearing the music blasting on the PA before they played. And a lot of which I didn't know, even that music there. I was hearing stuff like XTC and stuff like that. And then they played, and they were great, and they all, like, sang, you know. It was, like, harmonies and
like the super Beatles.
Loud guitar. Yeah, you know, but with an edge. It had a good edge to it and pretty rock, and I was really into it. And that was my first sort of taste of club rock and roll, and I thought, man, this is where it's at.
Yeah, you didn't have to go through the arena rock shit. First gig me and V. Boone saw was T-Rex, 1970.
Oh. Well, at least that's...
1973, we were 15 years old. Yeah.
Nice.
It was the Long Beach Auditorium. Yeah, they tore it down. It's the Long Beach Opera House now. That's where they filmed all those Don Kirshner rock concerts, if you saw those.
Oh, really? Wow, that's awesome.
You know, you weren't in school in the 90s because trumpet players got to be in rock bands, right, because of the ska thing. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I want to play Stayin' Found.
Yeah. I never smoked, but the fact that friends in high school were smoking caused me no distress or discomfort. Free of any scientific inquiry, I became a collaborator with a project documenting their smoking. I'd have them burn a cigarette hole in a page of my ever-present pocket notebook. Next to each hole, I'd write their name, the date, time, and cigarette brand. There would be four or five burns to a page, and after the first few pages, I started a dedicated notebook specifically for this project. I made three books in total. The first one starts in May of 1971, and the final one ends in April 1972. Looking through the notebooks, I know who I was with at a specific time. With several people having burned holes within minutes of each other, it's clear there was a group of us hanging out somewhere. Some friends would seek me out when they lit up so they could be documented. For more than four dozen years, I've kept these notebooks close at hand, packed in a box, treating them with the same care as old family photographs.
Watt for Pedro show. Started that chunk of music off with Velvet Crush. Doing Staying Found. Then we had Alvarez with Him for the Corner. Brand new. Party Lights. Desire Always Takes a Toll. So I hear. David Greenberger, Tyson Rogers with Tiny Book of Smokes. David Greenberger has got a new release, and it's like an autobiography. He has me do a spiel on one that he wrote. Melvin Gibbs, great bass man, brand new, Life Force. I think he was just in Europe with Ardo Lindsay, DNA guitar man. BXMR, Brother Bruno, out of Rotterdam, with Ominous. This is live at the Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble New Music Fest 2023, Day 3. Tune called Jen Zaniel. And it was composed by Gracie Fagan, performed by the Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble. Thank you, Randolph and Graham. Leaf Blower, after that. Gliding. I'm going to... Leaf Blower is Raquel and her with Jared have a Galaxy, and I'm going to do the Galaxy Lot Trio thing again out Firepost. Firehouse Outpost, Joshua. Sorry. Scrapers Papers, best band name ever. Well, one of them. With Sin, and finally Velvet Crush. That's a good name, too. California Incline. Have you ever seen that? It's downtown L.A., you know.
I saw a sign.
No, that's the Angels thing. The California Incline is in Santa Monica, right? Goes to PCH. That's right. It's the Angels flight that I'm thinking of downtown. But you saw a sign? But I want to know this. Not after school graduating, but after school in the afternoon. Did you get into the garage band, basement band, bedroom band?
Yeah, eventually I did. I started a band. Started playing with one of my friends who was also in band, and we used to get together and do stuff, and so we eventually morphed into a kind of a garage band, more or less, and it was sort of a new wave kind of band, I think I would say.
Now, were you rocking the horn?
Nine.
Did you switch instruments?
Oh, I ditched the horn, yeah. I started playing guitar. And
tell me about getting into the guitar. Bass. How'd that happen?
Well, you know what? I wanted to write songs, you know, so I decided to learn to play. I learned to play bass, started playing bass first, and then guitar, because I just really wanted to write songs, so I went to the bar.
Hey, don't tell Dizzy Gillespie that. Don't tell Miles Davis that, because they wrote a lot of songs on the Funkin' Trouble.
Well, I was a kid, you know. I wanted to write.
I know what you mean. Remember we were talking about...
I need some chords. I need some chordal instruments.
Well, they do chords, too, but they're modified, they arpeggiate chords, right? Actually, that's the way you were talking about TV music. Carol Kay, that's the way she worked bass lines. She never played riffs. She always arpeggiated chords. But let me ask you this.
I love the complaining.
Let me ask you this. How did you get your first guitar?
From a pawn shop. I went and bought it, and it was pretty cheap and pretty terrible, but... I learned to play on it and then moved up eventually to something. And I was amazed that it was so much more playable when I got a decent instrument.
And what about, because most of the time the MO is the parents get you an acoustic guitar and you're wondering why it don't sound like those guitars on the record.
No, you know, I bought a crappy electric guitar first thing. I didn't do an acoustic first.
Good. Okay.
I don't even remember what it looked like. I think it looked sort of like an SG or something, but it was really kind of horrible, you know, with like the super high action that you couldn't really play. And
They say a poor carpenter blames his tools. But look, this is what you needed to play with your buddy, right? What was he playing?
He played keyboards, so he was kind of locked into that, so... So the first band actually had, you know, like a Vox organ kind of thing. So it was new wavy with that kind of sound.
Okay. But did you have a drummer? Did you have a bass?
Yeah, we did. We had a drummer, another school friend, and then we recruited a couple of guys from the school. So.
And what was this band called, Paul?
They were called Nines.
Do you remember the Nines' first gig?
Wow, you know, I don't. Probably, though, I was going to say that our first gig was probably, as many of them were, opening for some band at Mabel's, that club you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. That's bitching. We share a common thing there. Let me ask you this. What was the material? Was it original, or were you copying songs off records like me and D. Boone when we were boys?
We were writing, so it was
that's
the original
great.
One. It was like half and half. I mean, that's why I start. My whole thing about into music was I wanted to make songs. So
yeah.
So they even that band, me and John, the other guy, would we wrote songs, each of us sort of together and separately, and then and we had covers, you know, to fill out the set. But the goal was to make our own songs.
And you know the Beatles strategy, right? One guy writes the verse, and the other guy brings in the bridge. That's completely different, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good strategy.
Right.
I don't remember how we did it, actually. I actually don't remember how we put them together. I know some of them I wrote kind of more, but I feel like we did collaborate some, and then the band also helped fill stuff out. You know, it was all that was all the learning process, learning how to do it. So we probably tried every way that
me and D. Boone tried 5 or 6 songs where he write one line, I write the other.
How did that work?
Only 5 or 6 songs. Yeah, but they're probably not our hits.
I do like doing the thing you were mentioning where you do different parts. In fact, we...
Yeah, because you get a trippy thing, right? Because at the end of the day, it's Sausage Factory. The people don't know where it's coming from, right? It's going into their ears.
Yeah.
Remember Wizard of Oz with Frank Morgan? Paid no attention to that man behind the curtain? He was the motherfucker behind the curtain. He got there by accident, right? The balloon crashed.
That's right.
So you can't remember the first gig. What was the arc of the trajectory of the band? How long it last?
Well, it was really sort of actually, this was kind of my second band. I had a little fledgling band in high school, but so this was more like post-high school. And so it lasted the length of people's college careers. So it was about the three years or 4 years band, basically.
And what do you do with music after that?
After that, I made a solo record using some of the later stuff from that band plus a few other stuff that I had written, and that was my first sort of...
Now, by solo, I remember my first solo record. There was 48 other dudes on it. It wasn't really solo. But was your solo? Did you play everything?
I had guys play with me, but I wrote the songs and I played and sang, and I played guitar, and I think I had a couple of other guitar players on different songs, and I had a drummer. It was full band. All of it was full band, but my songs, and I played guitar and maybe bass, but I had a bass player too, so I didn't do bass on everything. Anyway, it was kind of like half, it was an EP, so it was half stuff from my previous band, Nine, so they were on those songs, and then there was 3 other songs that I did with different musicians.
And did you tour it?
I didn't tour. I was in Chicago at that time, and I did a few shows, but that band didn't, that version of me didn't really tour anywhere. I didn't really tour until, my first tour I did was with the Windbreakers, Tim Lee and Bobby Sutliff. That's the first tour I ever did.
And how'd you get involved with them?
You know, that's a good question. Probably, Velvet Crush drummer Rick Mank, who was connected kind of to everybody, knew about everybody, but I don't really remember how I connected with them, probably through him. So we went as a rhythm section to play with them. We went down to Jackson, Mississippi, and played with them. So I think Rick got us involved in that. And then also through Rick, I met Matthew Sweet and got involved with him, whom I'm still involved with to this day.
I think New Jersey, right?
He was in Princeton, New Jersey at that time. He's from Lincoln, Nebraska originally, but at that time he was living in New Jersey. And Velvet Crush started, though we're all Midwesterners, we started in Providence, Rhode Island. So
you know what Sly Stone said?
What's that?
It's not where you're from, it's where you're at.
Love it.
At least 9/10 of the law, right? But Matthew had a fucking... People like Ivan Julian.
Yeah, I know.
Dick Lloyd. Yeah, I mean, he had some guitar men on his records, huh?
He really did. Robert Quine.
Bob Quine, yeah. Three guys that I look up to so big time.
Oh, my God. You know, I played Ivan.
And Matthew was always very kind to me whenever he'd see me. Very cool people.
Matthew's great. Yeah. Yeah, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. I saw that you had Ivan on the show. I listened to a little
twice.
Bit
and, I had Ivan on the show twice. His wife on the show twice, Ivan. Cynthia, and his son Austin.
Oh yeah,
shit! I would have never believed Ivan, that Ivan shit. Was in, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Ivan was in the touring band with me, and so we did a two or three tours together with Matthew, and I love Ivan. He's he taught me a lot of stuff. You know, he's a great. Living legend and a great player and a great human.
The closest thing I could put him to, and he told me he was into, Keith Richards. It's a trippy version. Yeah. You know, it's an Ivan Julian version of Keith Richards. It's so trippy. It's, I love it. I love it. And him and Bob, and you know what he told me about him and Bob? Their idea was no lead rhythm, do like Yardbirds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what he told me.
I didn't know that, but that makes sense. That makes sense.
You know, the back page or whatever, Clapton. We're at the end of the first hour, Paul. January 10th, 2024, this Pedro show. It's January 11th for you, though. Yeah, hold tight for hour two. January 10th, 2024, second hour of the Watt from Pedro.
Woo!
حطيت ورود الحب قدامك بالسلام بالسلام مسحت بحور الدم علشانك سيب الغضب سيب الألم سيب السلاح سيب السلاح وتعالى تعالى نعيش تعالى نعيش يا حبيبي ويكون غطانا سلام عايزك تغني يا عيني ويكون غناك بالسلام سمع العالم يا قلبي وقول سيبوا الغضب سيبوا الألم سيبوا السلاح وتعالوا نعيش تعالوا نعيش في سلام
For Pedro Show, start off second hour. Velvet Crush, Standing Still. Kind of a big sin, but I'm worried about what that's about. Barbez, brand new. Elegy for Gaza. Actually repurposed just recently. Sunken Lanes with Horse. Let's Graham yet with yet another project. And then Time Wraps Around You, Velvet Crush. Okay, so you're being like a sideman with Matthew here.
And yeah,
you know,
I've been playing
first you had a band.
Playing with them since like
But I'm trying to keep in the timeline here. So you come out with the band with your school guys, and then you make a solo record, and then you go to Mississippi, play with some people, and now you're in
tour. Yeah.
And now you're in Matthew's band as a sideman with Ivan. What goes on after that?
Well, the Matthew thing happened sort of concurrently with starting Velvet Crush. So that's what put us in Rhode Island in the East Coast, where Matthew was also in the East Coast. So we were doing that. And Matthew, actually, he recorded our first record for us, the one called In the Presence of Greatness, which Ash and Earth, you played that. That was from there. Matthew recorded that in his he had like a house in Princeton where he rented, and it was his demo studio where he would make demos. And we said, your demos always sound cool. Would you record us there? So he did that, and that became that first record. And then, so we were doing, Rick Menk and I were doing Velvet Crush, and also playing with Matthew until we had to stop to kind of do our own touring.
No, let's get into Velvet Crush, because that's your baby. How did that come about?
With my longtime pal, Rick Menk, who's another fellow Illinoisan, and we were doing music in Champaign, doing stuff, and at one point we just said, you know what, we got to get out of here and go to a coast or something.
By the way, you know what Illinois means? You know the Illini, right? Tribe they named it after. It means up the river. And I learned that because I learned Arkansas means down the river.
Is that right?
Yeah, they share. Yeah, that's why that mob place, Hot Springs, no one was allowed to shoot each other. That goes way back with Native people. You weren't allowed to fight, you know. But anyway, so fellow Illinois man, and you guys find yourself on the East Coast. You're helping out, Matt.
So Rick and I relocated to Providence, where we actually stayed with our future guitar player, Jeffrey, and got him in the band, too. And then we started practicing and playing, and we recorded stuff at Matthew's rehearsal studio space there. And then we got that put out, and that actually came out on Creation Records in the UK as well. And that kind of started our stuff. And at the same time, Matthew was starting to tour. I did a tour with Matthew, the record before Girlfriend. It's called Earth. And Rick and I did a tour with him then. And then after that, he kind of retooled stuff and did Girlfriend. And then we started doing some touring work with that. However, we had to leave. That started taking off, and we had to kind of leave and do touring for Teenage Symphonies to God, which was our kind of a major label thing that we did with Velvet Crush. So we left for a couple of records of Matthew's, and then came back after that fact.
You know who's living in Providence these days? It's Peter Mission in Burma.
No, is that right?
I wouldn't shit you.
I did not know. I haven't been, Velocrush played there a while. We did like a little reunion thing, 2019, and it had changed quite a lot. The city had changed quite a lot, but I hadn't really been there much since then, or before then. So, but I, you know, we have a soft spot for the prop.
Oh man, the old days. Started. Do you remember, you're not old enough to know the living room, right? The hot.
Yeah, I went to living room. Lupo's, the living room.
Well, Lupo's is a little later. Yeah, downtown.
I think you guys saw Living Room Phase 2 maybe or something.
This guy, with his mom ran this place. She would cook you up fried chicken and stuff. It was by a Samsonite suitcase factory. And he got killed. He got run over on a bicycle. Terrible.
Oh, Jesus.
He was a great cat. You know, people, the promoter's always the enemy. Bullshit. I mean, you work for an asshole once. Unless you're an asshole yourself. And right. Having a promoter, a guy who keeps the scene going while you're not there, I don't know. I just got to understand. This ain't Velvet Crush. This is something you gave me called the Small Square. Let's listen.
That's the new thing. That's my new thing.
We own the hourglass for a while, but then we ride. Storms, but death
I like the looseness, actually. It's nice.
Watch for Pedro's show.
I've only been doing it 22 years, 7 months. Still blowing clams, still trying to get it together. I'm slow learning. People, that chunk of music started off the most recent thing, huh? From
yes.
Paul here. The Small Square with a tune called The Hourglass. And then we had Tony Oxley. We just lost this man. Incredible, adventurous, pioneer music drummer man. This is Sounds of the Soil. Then the Retail Simps out of Quebec with Love Without Friction. Derek Moneypenny. He's out in the desert, kind of close where I'm going to play Finn, which means end, kind of, right? FOD yep. with Pep Squad. Ray Shin with What's a Transom, Bob? And then finally, the Small Square again with 5-9 song. Okay, give us the fucking lowdown on Small Square.
Small Square is a project I've been doing for a little while now with my friend John Richardson, who is the longtime drummer for Tommy Keane, played with a lot of people, and he has a studio nowadays up in Wisconsin, and we start our recordings there. We made 2 records, the new one, Hourglass is from the new one that just came out in October, and I'm just kind of, you know, talking about it with people when I can. But yeah, so we've been doing that. It's just kind of a, you know, mostly kind of like a songwriting project. We've done some live stuff, but not a ton. We did a tour of Japan for the first record, but it's mostly like, you know, exploring songs and recordings and stuff like that. So, but I like the new record. It took a while to get it out. We sort of finished it right as we went into the COVID time, and it took a little while to get it out. But it's out now, so I feel better.
How do you know when a prod is, you know, worth the time, worth the endeavor? And when is it just like, whoa, maybe this is like practice?
That's a good question. I don't know that I know. But, I do songs and stuff regardless of whether there's a reason to, kind of, you know, apart from doing it. So I just try and keep writing and
okay, let's talk about
you know,
that.
I mean
let's talk about that. Yeah. Do you have like you make demos? You got a library of demos?
I do make demos. I don't have so much of a library because I try to use everything I can. I mean, there's, you know, some unfinished stuff obviously, but I don't
what about words? Do you write on demand or do you have like a trove of stuff that's just waiting to see the light of day?
I do it to order. Yeah, I do it to order. I don't really have I have a few little scraps, you know, idea things, but nothing. I don't like have a full poem.
You know, I heard is like that is Mick Jagger. He comes in the studio with no words. He just, you know, oh, I got to write this shit cuz the pressure is something.
What I do is I usually have like the a lot of times when I go to John's to record something, I don't have the whole song, and I have the sort of the key parts of it, and I have like a idea for a song form, and I have some kind of semblance of some words, and then we do the tracking, and then I fill it in after that point, because we don't have, since I'm here in Japan, we don't have a lot of time together, so we try and, you know, make hay while the sun shines, as they say, and track as much stuff as we can do, and then if there's extra time, we start filling in the stuff, but I work on a lot of stuff on my own in my little room here, my little studio.
And then you use the internet to trade files, right?
Yeah, we trade files all the time, and but we try and get the drums. He's got a good place to do drums and stuff like that, so we try and get that happening, and then whatever else we can do while I'm there. Sometimes we'll have guests from the area, you know, that he knows or that are gettable from that area. We have them come and play with us, and that's fun to do. So we did a good bit of that on this record too. But yeah, so I just, you know, I'll send him stuff. I'll do demos and send him stuff, and then when we get together, we pick one. I just make like a, you know, a song list or a CD or whatever, and we go, okay, let's work on this. And so we start working on that in whatever stage that's in. Sometimes it's like very skeletal, sometimes it's just like one part, sometimes it's a whole demo, a full-blown thing, you know, any number of ways. And and that's what we do when we have guest players as well. We just play them the song and say, any of these sound cool that you'd be interested in doing something on? You know, once they're there, we trap them in the studio and then say, do you want to play on any of these? Like, what do you feel? And so if they have a feeling about something, we'd start doing that.
Oh, sort of like a Donald Fagen, Walter Becker thing.
Yeah,
No, probably not as many dudes end up on the floor. Somebody gave me
not
a book,
as many
man.
Dudes. Yeah, we don't do 14 in the top
5. You know, like, right, Larry called some like shit on the floor. Yeah. Okay. Look, people, we're at the end of the second hour, January 10th, 2024 edition WAP Pedro Show. Special guest, Paul Chastain. Hold tight for hour three. January 10th, 2024, it's the third hour of the WAP from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Wap for Pedro show start off third hour. More small square.
Woo.
23rd. 23 skidoo, right? 23 is a heavy number. 2 plus 3 is 5. All fives, right? For every two things revealed, keep three concealed.
Howard 23rd is a good example of, this was a song that, it's a good example of what we were talking about earlier, where you have the parts and the other person makes up the other parts of the song, like the bridge. So this song was an idea that John, the drummer, had on piano. He had the sort of verse part and said, I have this thing. I said, oh, that's cool. Let's make a song out of it. And then it needs another part. Okay. So then I sat down with the piano and made up the bridge part. And then we arranged that into an order. And then we recorded the piano part to it to start the recording. So, and I really liked the way that turned out, you know, like it was.
So you didn't mention piano. You taught yourself piano?
Yeah, I play a little bit. I'm one of those sort of like, jack of all trades, master of none. I'm kind of, that describes me pretty much, I think.
You know what? Everybody's like that to some extent, unless you're fucking kicking like Cato. you know, think about it, right? The autodidact, and then there's the mentor and the sensei and all that kind of thing. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to get to where you are, but this is where you are. That's interesting. 23rd Street, New York City, that's where the main Mason Lodge is. Hard to tell you about
it. No.
Let me explain more of what we play to the people. Stephen Downing with Olympia Dreaming. Death Tax, alternate ambient mix from Express Window. Book on VHS with Thoughts and Prayers. This is from the benefit compilation, Welcome to Gaza. Disorganism with Shreds of Decency, Gaza. Finally, now this sounds very Illinoisan. Although I think there's a Springfield in every State of the Union, maybe. There's a Lincoln, I know that. But the Springfields with Sunflower.
So I'm way back.
Yeah, but you got to give me this info on this tune because it's the only time we play, right?
That's right.
Okay, Springfields.
Springfields, it's Rick Mink and I. We used to do pre-Velvet Crush. We used to do these recordings that were just the two of us, but then we would try and get somebody to put them out, and there would just be a different band name each time. So we did a few of those, and Springfields is one of those. And Springfields featured Rick singing instead of me, and kind of his song. Sunflower is his song more. So I play on it, and we kind of put the song together, but mostly his idea. And this song, the reason I put it on, it was recently released on the Sarah Records collection, and there's like books and stuff about Sarah Records right now. So just a little tie into that scene that we had at that point.
Yeah. There's a Springfield in Connecticut. I think that's where the Rifles are from.
There's Springfield. I think you're right. Every state in the
United States. Yeah, in a Lincoln, too.
It's like, you know, on The Simpsons, it's like Springfield, right?
But I think that's where Matt Groening grew up or something. A town like it.
Uh-huh. It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. That's.
But what's the call? Eugene's got a sister town. Damn
Eugene,
it.
Oregon?
Yeah, Eugene. It's a college town. It's where the Ducks are. And then there's a town right next to it. And I think.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
I think he might have grew up there or something. But anyway, I don't mean the Bogart on your thing here. I want to play this Ami Onuki.
I want to become one too. was dark and rude. Temper on the corporal says, lights up on the moon. Tweaking down the bully stomach, singing him a tune.
Waiting, and this is a song called I've Been Waiting. Right.
Walk for Pedro show, last music for this edition. We started that chunk off with Amiyonuki. In parentheses, you put Puffy Amiyumi. And this is with Be Someone Tonight. And then we had Fence Post, yet another Graham Proj. Darkness Cannot Drive Out Darkness. Hear, hear. Where Stanzi does. Laurie Lussler with Trans Disfigured Waltz. Number two, Healers with a cover of Fire O's song. Hear me.
Nice.
I talked about some Freemason shit in that tune. Late 80s. Yeah. And then finally, Matthew Sweet, I've Been Waiting Live. So, I'm talking to you in Japan. Which town?
I'm in a city called Takarazuka.
Okay. And how'd you get there?
This is where my wife is from. So, we ended up back here. It's in, I'm about halfway between Osaka and Kobe, for a little reference there.
Kinky. Right?
Kinky.
It's not the same thing, people. It's a region. It's not the other, that concept. But nothing to do with not being a hentai or a pervert, right? It's just a coincidence.
Kinky.
So, yes. Okay, did you meet your wife over there or over here?
I met her in the States, actually. So, yeah, she was just traveling around over in the States, and I met her. Actually, from, I believe it was in Indianapolis at a Matthew Sweet show that she had come to see while she was in the States traveling around. So I met her. And then we didn't start dating at that point, but I had known her for a few years.
You know what? Guitar players from Indianapolis, one that I really dig. You'd have to be able to read my mind, I guess. Wes Montgomery. And I played in Tokyo with Han Bennick, who actually played with Wes Montgomery. Wes Montgomery only used his thumb.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know much about him.
Well, go to YouTube.com. Well, he learned a bunch of Charlie Christian solos, and then he get this. John Coltrane asked him to join his band, and he turned him down. He said the music was too
hard.
What? Yeah. But check out Wes Montgomery. He died kind of young in his late 40s, maybe 1968 or something. Year after John Coltrane.
And I know some of his records, but I didn't know he was from Indy. That's interesting.
He does a great cover of John Coltrane's Impressions.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but just with his thumb going both ways. So,
wow.
Okay, so how long have you been living in Japan?
Maybe like almost 10 years now.
Okay. You know Sam Bennett?
I split my time. I mean, I'm in the States a lot, so it's kind of back and forth and doing stuff like that, but mostly here.
You know Sam Bennett? He's an Alabama guy who... Maybe 25 years he's living in Tokyo now.
I don't know him.
Yeah. See, all gaijins don't know each other. Jim O'Rourke told me, you know, the typical gaijin, I'm the only one. No, there's all kinds. But they don't know each other. Some of them know each other. Can you read and write?
Japanese? No. Well, I can read.
See, he got really upset at Sam Bennett for not doing that. Because he learned it like in a year or two.
It's hard.
Yeah, no shit.
I'm not good at it.
He gives me these two books that are like 3 inches thick each. Here, what? He's like, Christ, Jim.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so right now the ongoing concern is Small Square, mm-hmm. right? Are you going to help Matthew out with some more touring?
Actually, I'm heading over to the States at the beginning of February, and we're going to do a little exploratory touring. Matthew hasn't been out since before the before time. So it's been a little while. And so we're going to do a little swing through the Midwest in mid-February to see how it goes and get started again. So
Midwest in February, that sounds like a righteous time to tour the Midwest.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, Minneapolis in February.
Yeah, asking for it. Yeah, I did that with Black Flag Minutemen. Oh, man. Get this. We played Minneapolis at the 7th Street Entry, and then the next night was fucking... The Rainbow in Denver, 17 hours,
wow.
And you go up 5,000 so many feet. Yeah, but you know what?
That's
just get to play other towns. I'm not complaining. I'm not bellyaching.
Yeah, that's a haul, though.
Now, what you think Matthew would let Small Square like open up? Because you know, I saw a tour when I finally got to see Richard Hell. The opening band was Ivan Julian. What was the Invaders? Or he had his own little band there for a while. And they were the opening band. Intruders?
Yeah, Outsets?
Maybe that's it. That's it. Yeah. My memory's horrible. It was at the Whiskey.
I don't know. I don't know if that would be a good thing or not. I mean, it would be good in theory. I just don't know how that worked out. You know, he actually prefers to have like a not full bands open. Like we had the last few tours, we had our friend Tommy Keen.
I know Tommy. Open. I met him a couple times. Great cat.
Yeah, he's a good cat. And he would open just doing a solo thing. And that worked out really well because Tommy would actually travel with us, and we loved him. So.
Less hassle and stuff like that. I understand, Matthew. Yeah, pragmatic. Well, you got more music coming. Well, Small Square, right, just got done. So, but I know you said it took a while to come out. So what's in the pipeline right now for you?
Just making more songs and figuring out which songs belong together. Right now I'm trying to figure out how to stretch the, keep promoting this record and stretch the life of it past like a month or whatever, 2 months.
Well, can I put an invite out? Can I put an invite out to you when you get some new stuff? And I'll play everything you send me, okay? But I'd love to have you back on the show. We could play your music and talk about it.
Oh, yeah, I would love to. Thank you so
great,
much.
Paul. That'd be great. Thank you so much. So when you're ready, please bring, but no pressure, right? Mr. Wells taught us, no wine before it's time. Keep that keel in the water, Paul. People,
yes, sir.
January 10, 2024, this Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.